Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the roundtable for this Thursday, the 26th of July. Very nice to have you with us on another overcast rainy day. But we hope that, we provide some bright light in your life. I doubt we will, but we'll give it a shot.
Can I give you a bromide about rainy days?
Absolutely. Please do. I haven't had a bromide in a long time.
The great American philosopher Milton Hines, whose pen name was Soupy Sales,
yes,
said, "Let a smile be your umbrella, and you'll get a mouthful of rain." That's something to think about.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Ira Fussfeld is here. He is the publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman, and we're thrilled to have Ira with us.
Thank you very much.
Not the least of which is that because he's quoting Soupy Sales.
Yeah, you don't get a lot of Soupy Sales material anywhere anymore.
When Soupy Sales got quite elderly, he was at an event in Saratoga, and he was confined to a wheelchair, and he had. He had some throat issues, mm-hmm. but anyway.
Went to see him.
I was supposed to go interview him, and I brought my dad with me. One of the organizers was bringing me around and everything. And I just remember walking into this room, and there's Soupy Sales and my dad sitting there, like, telling stories. And I'm like, they are the same person. They are the same person.
I hope he brought a pie.
No, Ira, the two of them were doing Black Fang.
Oh, no, White Fang. White Fang and Black Tooth.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah, they were doing that for like 10, 20 minutes. Vera Carius, this is the best intro you've ever had, isn't it, Vera?
Really?
Didn't know what the hell we're talking about.
Vera Carius Kelly is the Siena College Professor of Comparative Politics. She is our regular panelist. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Excellent. Good
to
see you.
I try not to think about the rain and the mouthful of it that you get every time you walk outside.
Be true to your teeth, and they'll never be false to you. That was another Soupy Sales reference.
He would say, "Yeah, what do we mean by that?
And then Judy Patrick is here. Good morning, Judy.
Good.
How are you?
I'm wishing I had a pie right now.
Pie?
Yeah. Would you put it in Ira's face or mine?
You know, there's a lot of people who probably don't even know who Soupy Sales is.
No, it's a name. But maybe this audience will be older demographic. Yeah. He used to throw pies at.
He did.
That was part of his shtick.
What a waste.
Well, shaving cream.
They were
cream.
Just shaving cream. Yeah. Whipped cream.
Actually, if you are a fan of the. If you're a fan of, which I am, a fan of the Mr. Rogers documentary, they actually use the Soupy Sales show as an example of what bad children's television was. So there's that reference too. He's another year older.
And deeper in debt.
Alan Chartok is here. How was your birthday last night?
Very, very nice.
Yeah,
very nice indeed.
Very good.
Thank you for asking.
You're celebrating?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
We went out to dinner.
Did you have a cake?
No, I don't eat cake. But we went out to dinner.
You know the sugar thing. He doesn't like it.
And I had the swordfish. Good.
Oh, nice.
Number 10 on number 10 Castle Street.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Next to Mahawi. Yeah.
They put the they put a candle in the swordfish.
No, yeah. They did not.
In his mouth.
Well, good morning. Welcome. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. All right. Let us start and talk about what's happening in the world. And we begin with the very sexy topic of tariffs. So the U.S. and Europe have outlined a deal to ease the trade feud. The United States and the European Union stepped back from the brink of a trade war on Wednesday after President Trump said the Europeans agreed to work toward lower tariffs on other trade barriers and to buy billions of dollars of America's soybeans and natural gas. The surprise announcement made by Mr. Trump and the president of the European Commission, Jean-Claude Juncker, diffused for the moment a trade battle that began with Mr. Trump's tariffs on steel and aluminum exports and threatened to escalate to automobiles. Mr. Trump said, "We're starting the negotiation right now, but we know very much where it's going." Mr. Juncker said, "I had the intention to make a deal today, and we have made a deal today."
And it's pronounced Juncker.
I don't know.
Juncker.
Is it Juncker? Is it Juncker? My apologies.
That's
Juncker.
Okay.
Yeah.
Juncker.
Uh-huh.
Right. Okay.
Was it just yesterday that they announced $12 billion in aid to farmers to help
us?
Yes.
The question then becomes, do they still get the $12 million if they're going to buy the
billion?
Or the other question is, do they know what the heck is going on? Do they know what they're doing? It's just zigzagging all over the place.
Well, look.
So I think they will get the $12 billion. That's already allocated. And I think, if I remember correctly, I read that the projected losses so far for some of the farm communities are right around $13 billion already. So this is 13.
Yeah.
So it's barely covering some of the losses that farmers will experience up to this point.
Yeah.
And so, what about the losses being incurred by other industries as a result of these tariffs?
Like newspapers.
Like newspapers, where the price of newsprint has gone up 30%+. Well, like the automobile industry, where parts are becoming more expensive.
Motorcycles.
One of the interesting things is also why, you know, of course, the critique from within Republican ranks that is going to particular soybean farmers and particular states, of course, that supported President Trump
in the last election.
Yeah. But the critique that came was, well, is fishing, not farming of the sea. You know, protections for certain industries and not for others, and then of course the overall complaint that increasing these kinds of payments, who's paying for them? Of course, the taxpayer will pay. And what does it mean in terms of the Republican commitment to the types of trade that we have traditionally seen?
Yes, and that's really the key point here. The Republicans really got on him. And I think that Trump saw himself between a rock and a hard place here. Now he had Republicans who have been feckless and in line for him were showing some signs of really not going along. And I think that they really worried about that.
Mm-hmm. They basically said, well, a number of them, like Portman, for example, from Ohio, said that, he was offended by the idea that as a Republican, you now use, payments, government payments, instead of opening markets for quality U.S. products. And I mean, that goes back to some of the original positions that Republicans traditionally held. And so in addition with all of the critique that Trump has gotten since the Helsinki press conference debacle, and now with the trade pushback, I mean, it's mostly, I think, because Republicans have publicly chastised the president for some of the directions he has taken.
So
the
he's
last
really
week.
Getting beaten up, quite badly beaten up, right? He gets beaten up in the press. He gets beaten up by the Republicans. He certainly gets beaten up by the Democrats. During all of this, I saw Tom Friedman this morning on CNN, who was brilliant in his analysis of how bad things had gotten. And so he has to punt once again, and say, okay, he Juncker comes into the White House. They have their discussion, and they walk out. In the same way he walks out with Putin, in the same way he walks out with Kim Jong-un, and which is that he hasn't achieved anything. He says, we're going to do it.
Mm. Right. I'm still not clear exactly what they agreed to, if anything.
Well, they didn't release any details. We don't know that we can believe a word out of this man's mouth. So, you know, his word is not good to me until we see exactly what it is.
Well, I mean, they did agree on the fact that they will negotiate and postpone new tariffs.
Yeah,
especially
we negotiated
on cars.
To agree to negotiate.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. I think that's the
walk
away.
But we all know he can turn on a dime. And,
yes, except
and will
for the
and
pressure
has.
From yes. the Republicans. I think this is for the first time where maybe we can say at least disaster averted for now.
So let's talk electoral politics for a minute. Now we get the Republican senator who is running for political office who now calls the president and says, you realize, of course, you may have signed my political death warrant here because my people don't like where this is. If I speak out, there are going to be people who are mad at me for speaking out, and that might be just the number of votes that will cost me my election to the Senate, and you may lose the Senate because of what you're doing.
And keep in mind, this $12 billion in aid to farmers is a one-shot deal. They're not going to get this money next year. So they'll get it just before the election, but they're not going to get it next year. So if they're still facing the same problem with their soybean exports exports, their pork exports, they're going to be in a world of misery next year.
And the farmers that we've seen interviewed across the board don't want this. They want to. They want to want welfare. They work hard. They were doing fine with their soybean, and now
edamame.
The government's got to pay that. Mm-hmm. And of course, Trump has created a problem, and now winds up having to spend $12 billion.
That's the thing that we seem to be witnessing here more and more.
Right.
Is
it's not
that,
the only time
that. This major problem comes to oh my God, we've created there's a crisis, mm-hmm. which was created by this administration, and then they come and then they solve it and take credit for solving the problem that didn't exist up until a month ago.
Absolutely.
And
well,
if you want to throw one more piece of cynicism into this, the announcement
I always want to do that. Yes.
Well, the announcement yesterday was apparently hastily arranged, and by having it hastily arranged in the Rose Garden, it deflected from what was being televised all along, which was the Pompeo hearing.
Yeah. Right.
Depending on your point of view, and I suspect more people would agree with me that Pompeo was not purporting himself very well in this hearing.
Yeah,
so
I agree.
To get him off the screen over to Trump might have been part of the game plan.
Really?
Oh, I think so.
It's possible. Interesting. But, you know, I wanted to come back to farmers. I mean, I can only assume, not being having any experience in the area, but one has to plan for future crops or future investments if you have pigs or, you know, you have a large farm, you have to plan. So you need some sense of what the future will look like.
Crops,
so,
land,
soil.
Yes.
Right.
So you have to purchase a lot of things. You have to maintain equipment. You have contracts. What to do when this president swings back and forth on policies and you're not sure who will buy from you and there's this one-time payment and you're not quite sure if you should even invest in certain crops.
And yet,
I mean, this must be very unsettling.
And yet, Vera, I don't see a scintilla of evidence that the Trump voters are moving off the dime. Now, somebody will call and say, yeah, I saw one poll that showed, you know, a 5% drop. But people are sticking with him, and farmers are sticking with him. So, and that's what he's, because if he loses the farmers, if he loses the agricultural community, he's done.
So in some ways, I think you're right. But in other ways, I don't think we can speak of the Trump voter anymore. We also have the same sort of categorization sometimes on the Democratic side. I don't think there's the Democratic voter. There are a lot of different kinds of constituents that are part of blocs, and it is time to peel off some of the blocks, and I think we see some movement. Not the hardcore Trump supporters who somehow think this president is profoundly talented.
The 40%?
You know, whatever he does is a brilliant plan of negotiating, and, you know, in the future it'll all pan out. Not those people. I think they're just simply sticking with him. But I think we're beginning to see this process of peeling the onion.
Well, I hope you're right. I just don't think you are. You know, I think there are an awful lot of people who are just staying with this guy despite the fact that their self-interest is being wrecked.
It's 88% Republicans approve. That's the latest number I saw.
Yeah,
if he gets every one of those 88% Republicans, if he is not holding the independents, and there are a lot of people who tried, they said, let's try it. I think they're the people who are fleeing.
Yeah, but Vera raised another issue, and that is the lack of solidarity that you're seeing developing within the Democratic Party.
That's a big problem.
Right now. And the Times ran a very good series of articles on how the left and the middle are beginning to beat each other up so terribly. And that could, of course, cost the Democrats the election.
Hey, I want to weigh in that I agree with Vera. I think Trump will lose. I think Trump supporters are going to eventually fall away. I think that he's not he hasn't hypnotized them. I think they have brains.
And also, I mean, we are seeing the some results of people who are. It's complex, but when you look at the people who didn't vote and who are now upset and are saying that they will vote, mm-hmm. you wonder.
That's where
obviously,
it is.
You wonder whether that's mm-hmm.
that is where it is. John Faso said to me the other day, "Your panel is obviously not representative of who's out there. It's not a balanced panel." So he's feeling the heat also, and he knows very well, because I see it in Berkshire County, Richie Neal's going to win in Berkshire County. And now they are moving over the line to work in the Faso campaign. Mm. And that is exactly what you're referencing, Joe, a waking up of the electorate who traditionally has gone to sleep.
Mm-hmm. That campaign, this Faso Delgado campaign, is going to be the mother of all congressional campaigns, but not in a positive way.
Well, but it should be because you know
the stakes are high.
That seat could be the difference between.
Do you live in that district?
Yeah.
Oh, so you're going to
I think the last time I was on, I talked about when Faso was in charge of the Republican Assembly Campaign Committee and the race that was run by them in our district was unlike anything we'd ever seen before in terms of it being dirty, I guess is the best way to put it.
Yeah.
And P.S., the Republican lost. It was a moderate Republican who was a young man who took the money and the advice of the state and Faso, and he made the Democrat look like a sympathetic figure. And that, and in this particular case, that took some doing.
30 seconds. Go ahead.
No, I'm just thinking Faso looks like he's going to have a struggle on his hands.
Well, he's going to be a tough guy.
Yeah. He's going to be a tough guy, but people get disgusted with some of the
things he does. He started out with the carpetbagging complaint, and then he went into this rap music baloney, and this is what we're going to be hearing.
Did he talk about that with you, Alan?
Indeed he did. Yeah. Indeed he did. He said people have a right to know what he said.
Do we run the first one today?
No, the congressional
court? Yeah, tomorrow. Tomorrow we'll have the first one.
And by the way, we've had a couple of letters saying, how dare you have Faso on your air? And why don't you have Delgado? Well, the truth of the matter is it's taken a long time to get the Delgado people to get their things together. We've been begging them for a long time to come here.
And sometimes there's nothing wrong with having somebody with a different opinion on, just to listen in.
We will always do that. We will always do that. I have two.
We're going to take a break, but we'll be right back right after this.
Pachalafika, Pachalafika, it sounds so romantic and perky. Oh, I know that phrase will make me thrill always, for it reminds me of you, my sweet. Just the mention of that tender word of love gives my heart a jerkish, turkish beat. I won't say Sibon or l'amour toujours, for they can't express what I'm feeling.
Yeah. Just want to point out, this was a hit. Pakalafaga. Soupy Sales.
Yeah. Who was also noted for coming on the air one day and saying to his child audience, you know, boys and girls, if you'd have you'd go to your parents' wallets and look for those little green pieces of paper and send them to me. And he got results from that, and he got suspended as well.
Yeah, I got an FCC suspension.
How can Ira know so much about Soupy Sales?
I am a pop culture savant up to a certain year. And
what scares me is that Ira and I share the years. I don't know how that happened. I think it's from having elderly parents. But anyway, welcome back. We have a great panel for you here. Alan is here, Vera, Judy, Ira, and we have letters from our audience, real letters from real listeners, and they sound like this.
Janet says, Soupy.
Uh-oh.
I knew we'd find him.
The joy of hearing the opening of one of my favorite radio talk shows and finding a Soupy Sales reference. Growing up in New York City in the 1960s, Soupy was one of my major comedic influences. Between him and Mad Magazine, I suppose much of my world orientation can be explained, and that's Janet in Ulster Park.
Janet, if you have, I don't know if the other cables, but on DirecTV, channel 368, which is Jewish Life TV.
Oh, that's right. I watch this.
Soupy Sales is on every day at 1:30. Yeah. His repeat.
So if you have the local cable.
I don't know if it's on the cable systems, depending on where you live.
Oh,
but it's on DirecTV.
Yeah.
Oh, DirecTV.
Yeah, Jewish Life TV.
But it is on Spectrum, too.
Is it?
Yeah. So it's great.
1:30.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And the black and white versions are
better. We clearly know the audience range for them.
Well, you know, I'm retired and I have time on my hands.
No, but that is interesting, Ira, that the black and white is better than the color.
Yeah, the original.
Because I have to say that the black and white Gunsmokes are better than the...
Forget the C-SPAN hearing on congressional budget
appropriations. Well, you can get that later. Those are black and white.
Here we go. Catherine says, farm subsidy. Dear panel, a couple of points that seem to be overlooked in the general reporting in the media, but maybe in your program could be included as part of a more in-depth discussion. One is, yes, the farmers don't want welfare, but and they work hard. But most people on welfare are hard workers, too,
absolutely,
and don't want to be beholden to it. Two, what about corporate welfare for agribusiness? All good points.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, you know, the fact that, you know, welfare recipients are often in a very difficult position and they don't get recognition for all the efforts they make, all the work they put in, all the caring a lot of people provide to family members that are in difficult positions, children, elderly, and so on. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't recognize that. It's almost like a dirty word, when in fact we should recognize that this is an essential component of a human society, a community.
Okay, Vera, but why is it a dirty word?
Well, it's been made a dirty word as if people that are receiving any kind of aid don't deserve it. It's their own fault for being poor or less educated or being born somewhere, of being marginalized. I mean, it's not their fault. It's class warfare.
Right. Yeah. Isn't the Trump administration trying to rename some organization with the word welfare and to impose the word welfare into it for that very reason? Yes, they are.
Answer your own question. That's great. Okay. Keith says, FASO tariffs and budget deficits. Panel, besides the tariffs, the budget deficit is exploding. We are looking at an $890 billion for 2018, $1.1 trillion in 2019. In 2015, John FASO is running for office. He was screaming about Obama and a deficit of $439 billion. Now, FASO, is on the House budget, and that's in big block letters and underlined, budget committee, and the deficit has exploded. Talk about hypocrisy, and that's from Keith.
Yep, hypocrites.
Susan says, panel, Trump. All right, Trump is giving $12 billion to farmers, ? Do Congress and Senate have any say about this or another executive order? The answer is no. They don't. He can do what he wants here. He has the authority to do that. But, of course, if Congress wants to change the law, they can. And you can imagine this Republican Congress going out and changing the law. They won't do it.
This ability for him to do this dates back to the Depression, if I understand.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
Right. So it doesn't require the approval of Congress, which is very interesting that was unearthed as an option, of course.
Stephen says, Democrats. Mm. Democrats must support every Democratic nominee. I've contributed to both Zephyr Teachout and John Tester, two whom may disagree more than agree. Now, it says two whom may disagree more than agree, Steve. I'll leave it at that. All right.
But just a friendly reminder to pre-read your messages before you send them so we can make perfect sense.
Well, it could have been to whom I disagree or we disagree with each other. It wasn't quite clear, that's all.
Yeah, that's all. That's fine. Let's go. Anybody have anything else on this before we move on to another topic? Hearing nothing, we move on to another topic. And we go to the story about Rod Rosenstein.
Oh, boy.
The House conservatives have introduced the resolution calling for impeachment of Rod Rosenstein, who oversees special counsel probe on Russia. I thought this story died. Like, it came on, they floated the balloon, and then I thought it died. And then it didn't, obviously. And conservative lawmakers on Wednesday introduced a resolution calling for the impeachment of Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein in a move that marks a dramatic escalation in the battle over the special counsel investigation into Russia interference in the 2016 election. The effort is led by Mark Meadows. He is a Republican from North Carolina, as well as Jim Jordan, who is a Republican from Ohio.
Now, isn't Jim Jordan's name in the paper for something else?
Yes, another deflection.
He's the wrestling
controversy.
Yeah,
and
whether or not he helped cover up, you know.
And, yeah, you know, I think it might be a redirect, you're right, about what was going on with Pompeo.
Yeah. At the very least, even if it wasn't, so much of that is going on that you automatically think they're just trying to divert your attention.
Well, there's another couple of issues here. First of all—
And I'm sorry, can I just—I just want to read one line here because I think it's—I just—I think it bolsters your point that I think you're about to make. But Meadows and Jordan stopped short of forcing an immediate vote on the measure, sparing Republican lawmakers for now a potential dilemma.
Not only that, but the outgoing speaker, Mr. Ryan, is against it.
Right.
So, and that's because he's outgoing. Whether he was still there, whether he would be as feckless as the others, I don't know. Feckless is the word of the month as far as I'm concerned. And I
just ask Samantha Bee.
Keep on using it, right. However, look, here's the reason. These guys, they get credit, as we say in politics. They get credit from their base for doing this, for being way out there. And the base says, okay, good, you know, they're doing impeachment. But I also think it indicates something about this president. Now, you can be sure the White House is working the phones on the Mueller investigation all the time. And by saying this, it sets it up for what is inevitable. I said it at 7:45 this morning. I say it again now. From the beginning, I have thought that when he's really in a tough corner, Trump is going to try to fire Mueller. And in order to do that, you got to get Rosenstein. So this may well be an indication of things to come.
Doesn't this, though, pinpoint the weakness of the Freedom Caucus at this point? Because this is going nowhere. It's a trial balloon that's just going to slowly deflate in a corner where they're going to sideline it.
I don't know, Judy. You know, I don't know that it's going nowhere. First of all, Trump is not showing his hand right now. But eventually he will, because he has to. I mean, if they're going to impeach him, if they're going to throw him out, if he's going to face some criminal charges as a result of this, they have to do this. And he will. And I think they're doing his bidding. I do.
The Freedom Caucus of 40-some-odd people, you're right, it does not have a lot of influence, except when there's a bill that needs to be passed and
they need
more Republicans, and they are sticking together. So
they
can block legislation. I don't see that this legislation has enough broad support to move forward. And to Alan's point, I mean, I've been sort of a naysayer about whether they're ever going to decide to try to fire Mueller or Rosenstein, but if we take Alan's position, which is not an unreasonable one given what's going on, if they reach a point where he feels that Trump or the Republicans are going to try to fire Rosenstein based on what has been reported at that point in time, don't you think that the amount of material at that point in time would be so overwhelming that they would look foolish trying to get this guy out because it would hurt them as well?
Well, that's what he's got to worry about. No two ways about it. That's what Trump has to worry about. But I've often made the analogy to the rat in the corner who, when having no other option, is going to bite you.
Yeah.
And I think that what we have seen about Trump is that he doesn't obey the norms of polite society, doesn't obey the norms of marriage, for example. He just does what he wants to do when he thinks he can get away with it. And I really think they think they can get away with it. They'll have to do it.
But observing from the outside in, it also shows that there are more open and visible cracks within the Republican Party. I mean, the Freedom Caucus has always been separate and pursued a different agenda, but this is so close to overstepping a boundary that most Republicans in the Senate, for sure, don't like and embrace. So this really is a complicated issue for the Republicans, which of course makes us interested in how it's going to be dealt with.
Well, it's complicated, but it's predictable, Vera, in my mind. Look, I always try to put myself in the place of a Republican senator, for example, it's not easy, and that's what we professionals like Vera and I have to do all the time. But you put yourself in the place, and you say, okay, if I oppose this president, I'm going to lose a primary, or I may even lose a general election, because, as I said before, there will be a number of Republicans who are so angry at me for giving him a hard time that they'll either stay home, they'll sit on the yes, 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 they won't go out and they won't vote. That means the Democrat wins in closely contested places.
And it's interesting that although Vera's correct, there do seem to be more Republicans speaking out about certain issues, negative regarding the tariffs, particularly mm-hmm. lately. The only ones who are really vociferous are those who are not running for
on the way out.
Yeah, on the mm-hmm. way out. And so where is the legislation that the Republicans are bringing to the floor in opposition of these policies? Can't find it.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
On the rug, around the wall. If you folks get bugged, do it in the hall. Do the mouse, yeah. Let's do the mouse. Come on and do the mouse with me. Hey, do the mouse, yeah.
Pete Seeger, take that.
It's another hit. Thank you, Mike and Sarah, for putting up with my my momentary...
All right, so that's the Soupy Sales. What is the title of that?
That was the mouse. That was the mouse.
That was actually a big hit. It was a
I'm
dance.
Glad Judy also admits the fact that we have no idea what we're dealing with
yeah,
here.
Yeah, again, it was a big deal at the time. But good. We'll get back to normal music in the next break, I promise. Good morning. Welcome, panel at WAMC.org. If you would like to send us a note or two, we would love to hear from you. Panel at WAMC.org. Let us go on to other topics, things making news today. The other thing, and we did talk about this, Alan had made a mention, I think you all did actually, about Mike Pompeo, and I guess it was Ira who said that it didn't particularly go well.
Yeah.
So the headline in the New York Times, which I find amusing, says Pompeo defends Trump with proof.
air quotes, proof,
and they have the actual quotes in the headline, of administration's actions versus Russia. Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State, told skeptical senators on Wednesday that the Trump administration has taken a truckload of punitive actions against Moscow as proof, again in quotation marks, it is tough on Russia, as the White House walked back an invitation for President Vladimir Putin to visit Washington this fall. Again, isn't this another one of these things that you throw it out at the last minute last week, saying we're going to have Putin come to, we've asked John Bolton to invite Putin to come to Washington before the midterms. You create a kerfuffle. And then while this is going on, you say, yeah, we're going to hold off then you blame the investigation and you say, because of the investigation of Robert Mueller, we're going to put this off until 2019.
Clear as mud. Judy said something interesting, I think, in our you look dubious that you said something. I said, people are going to get tired of this. You know, there's a point at which, you know, people just think all of what you just said was as clear as mud. You know, first this, then that, then throw it up in the air, and then take a guy like Bolton, who is disgusting, who is anti-Russian, a great hater of the whole Russian system, and then turns around and carries all of this water for the president. People are just going to, at some point, now I don't know about the Republicans, I really don't, but I do, some of them will sit on their hands, but the independents, they're not going to like this.
Mm. Yeah, I was thinking yesterday that Pompeo looked like he needed a Snickers bar. He was so unreasonably angry at simple questions.
Oh, on the contrary, it's the last mm-hmm. thing he looked like he needed was a Snickers bar.
Well, you know
bar.
Who he was playing to.
If you know what I mean.
I mean, he was playing to the audience of one. And here is a man who is supposed to be a diplomat, and the kinds of questions that they were asking him were not really combative. They want to know what both sides of the aisle. They want to know what happened in these.
Come on, Ira.
They seem genuinely curious about what the hell was going on.
They were very combative.
Well, they were combative when Pompeo was combative.
Yeah.
And well, Menendez and Corker, who is the chairman and a Republican, right, not running for re-election, was
once
very
again,
direct. He's, yeah, you know, we don't believe you, essentially.
Yeah. But one of the really interesting things for me, walk away, was that Pompeo admitted that, in fact, North Korea is continuing to make nuclear weapons-grade materials.
Correct.
Even though the president the day prior announced grandiosely
exactly
that some structure was dismantled. Well, the North Koreans have always done that. Pretend to negotiate, dismantle some obvious construction site or some bunker,
yeah,
and then in the meantime produce more of these nuclear materials, weapons grade materials. It's the same thing.
You know, when Malcolm Nance was sitting where, yeah, you're sitting now,
mm-hmm,
and it looked like the president had pulled off, you know, the deal of the century, mm-hmm, he was going to go, that there obviously they had,
right,
something, and he laughed.
Oh yeah.
You know, he laughed and he said, those North Koreans are not going to do a thing with the United States.
Right.
And I'm sitting there saying, well, wow, I hope Malcolm's right. Maybe
he's
wrong.
Well, I think we see the evidence now for the first. I mean, this was a public acknowledgement,
right,
even though buried within this sort of truckload of information on how we're pushing Russia. That was really one of the walkaway issues. In addition to that, is it President Trump's plan in his Twitter attack on Iran to pursue a similar strategy? I mean, if the Iranians are watching what's happening with North Korea, are they laughing right now? I mean, what is the strategy? Bluster, threat of war, mayhem and chaos theory, and somehow everybody will fall to their knees and comply?
Well, do you think that the Iranians can make any more sense out of this guy than we can? In other words, don't you think that it's got to be somewhat confusing to them, and he thinks that that's going to help them?
Well, certainly,
a dangerous game.
It's a dangerous game, but in
essence,
the Iranians have, along with the North Koreans, quite a bit of experience with behavior like that, because they also had, the Iranians, remember, had Ahmadinejad, who also used bluster and threats. I mean, it was behaving like a Trump, an Iranian version of Trump, in some ways.
But you know, the Iranian people are not happy with the Ayatollahs anymore.
No, of course not.
I think in the beginning there was a certain fervor which served, you know, the Ayatollahs well. But I think at this stage of the game, they got to worry about their population,
yes,
too. Listen, they control those elections, so they always say, now lately they've been saying, okay, we'll allow the so-called moderate to be the president. They're not fooling anybody.
No.
They decide who can run.
I mean, that's why
say.
We saw, yeah, all these protests. The underlying question are economics in Iran.
Sure.
People want a better life. People,
yes,
want access. Young people want to use access social media and have a life that they can live without constant supervision and critique and boxing them in.
Yeah.
And that is what the population is pushing for. But we currently have undermined that potential for domestic Iranian protest with this sort of mayhem chaos approach to Iran. I think it's been very unhelpful
protests. You know, this president just loves to pick out an enemy to tweet
about
him.
Well, he needs one.
Yeah, right. And the Iranians are perfect for him.
Right.
I just want to get back to the Pompeo testimony just for a minute. Here's a line from the Times article. Mr. Pompeo angrily dismissed questions about the deep gulf between the administration's tough policies on Russia and Mr. Trump's own warm statements about Mr. Putin. Mr. Pompeo told the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, "You somehow disconnect the administration's activities from the president's actions. They're one and the same."
Who said they're one and the same?
Pompeo. So how does that work?
Right. And at some point during the testimony yesterday, he did say that, well, there's the policy and then there's the words. He's suggesting that maybe they're not the same. But then he came back around at the end and said, yeah, they are the same, but they conflict with each other repeatedly.
Yeah, many times.
And we still don't really know what happened in the Helsinki summit.
And Pompeo, who, political philosophy aside, had a pretty good reputation in and around Washington. He's a top of his class at West Point, considered to be a smart guy. He is now getting stained by the Trump stain. And then how many of these people who have gone to work for Trump are emerging worse than when it started?
It's an interesting story. But Judy, I take great exception to your last remark.
What do you mean?
Well, clearly the last thing that guy needs is a Snickers bar.
Oh, so I was referring to.
See, now I was going to make. I was going to refer to Pompeo as not being a lightweight politically, and I didn't mean it the way I know you would have.
Completely under this.
There's a series of commercials where people are very angry and they need a Snickers bar.
Yeah, they need to calm down, or they're flagging with energy and they need the Snickers bar to get them through the day to get them to the. That's right.
I'm aware of that, but I had another purpose.
I know. In fact, we've already gotten letters about it. Okay, so.
So you don't believe, so either we don't believe what the president says or we do believe. I'm still confused about that.
My position is you can't believe, if he told me tomorrow was Friday, I'd have to look at the calendar. I don't believe a word.
So, but here's the interesting thing for Pompeo, right? He is, what does he do all day except for have staff members run around and say what's been communicated by the president? And then he looks at the tweets or the other bizarro utterances this president releases to the general public. Then he rushes off and tells his staff members, communicate out to our European allies, to whichever country has been targeted. Don't believe a thing this president says. Get in touch with me. Let's hammer out the real policy. I mean,
this? There have been some reports that the Defense Secretary Mattis has had to do just that.
Yes, exactly. I mean,
so
this
don't
is
worry,
a clown
allies,
show.
Don't worry.
Yeah, don't take him seriously, but you know.
Did you get the sense in watching Pompeo, maybe I'm saying the obvious here, I don't know, but did you get the sense while watching Pompeo that as they were questioning him and I agree with you, Ira, I don't think it was grilling him necessarily. I think they were asking him questions that were legitimate questions to be asked. But did you get a sense that the guy and I'm not saying I felt sorry for him, I didn't, but I don't think he knows.
No, I don't.
I don't think he knows. Like,
it.
I just don't think
he
has any
position.
Clue. Like, I don't think, you know, asking what went on at the meeting. Mm-hmm. I don't think he knows.
No, he doesn't know, and he gets more and more aggressive and defensive because he doesn't know and he should know, and he doesn't know what to say except for he has to put on this performance, and it must be deeply humiliating to somebody like that.
But he doesn't.
So aggression hides. This sort of humiliation. So that was a performance we saw.
And the greater question is, what really do the Russians have on the guy? I mean, I really believe that.
Not on Pompeo, you mean?
No. But again, you do think that that's a question that Pompeo has in his mind, too. What do they have on him?
Well, look, they all take these jobs. They all take these jobs, and they think they can get away with it. And they think they'll be the first ones to succeed at them, and they think they'll be the first ones to.
Limelight,
that's such a good
apparently.
Point. Yeah, they think they're going to be the first ones to succeed.
And limelight is so appealing,
absolutely.
Apparently, you know, fame, public recognition,
power.
I mean, that's
why
we're all here.
Moment, until the moment when you realize, wow, I'm just swimming in the slime.
Well, from till the day he dies, people will refer to him as Mr. Secretary. I mean, that's a honorific.
Zobit will say it too.
All right,
Zobit will say it.
Yeah, Zobit will say it too.
Alan's leaving, so I guess it's time to go for a break.
He's going to the store and get a Snickers bar.
He could have one.
I left my cell phone in another place. I have to get it.
All right. Well, please don't let the show get in the way. We'll be back after this. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. The Daily Freeman publisher emeritus Ira Fussfeld is with us. The professor of comparative. Are you the professor or
I'm
a?
I was going to say a professor.
The professor of comparative politics at Siena College in Loudonville, New York. Vera Acarius Kelly and Judy Patrick is with us, and I don't even know. I think Judy, I'm wondering now. Did I initially introduce you?
I don't even know.
I don't remember. So Judy Patrick is with us. She's vice president for editorial development of the New York Press Association. And Judy,
I think
good morning.
I'm Soupy Sales.
I know we said hello to you, but I don't think we gave you the full.
That's okay.
The full. This is what we call the reestablished.
Yes.
Yes. All right. So we go to letters, and Alan has lots of them. So we'll go to those.
Here we go. Margie says, Don't you mean audience of two? Pompeo is performing for his two bosses, the American POTUS, and, as Malcolm Nance observed in his most recent book, the first Russian POTUS.
Just, we mentioned Malcolm a couple times. Just a quick programming note, Malcolm will be with us tomorrow on the panel,
nice.
So we look forward to seeing him. He's, he's on the book.
On the bestseller list.
On the bestseller list. Yeah. He's on the book trail. He's going to win Bill Maher next week, but we'll have him here tomorrow.
Yeah, I don't think Pompeo, though, is performing for Putin, I don't think, with his background.
It's an audition.
It's an audition.
William says, stop the fat shaming. Dr. Shartok undermines every good point he ever makes by fat shaming Mr. Pompeo and needs to apologize, or nothing he ever says again will be seen as logical or objective. I do sincerely apologize. Kevin says, Trump, you're wrong. The Trump supporter will never leave him. Trump said it himself. I could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue for whatever reason. This is a cult that I can't or won't find their way to Madison Avenue or Avenue of the Americas.
Yeah, well.
Mary says,
response.
Hi. I saw Soupy Sales live at the World's Fair. Hi, panel. Thanks for bringing back great memories of fun TV.
Is that 39? What year was that?
64.
And a visit to the World's Fair, after which my friends and I crossed the track and saw the Beatles at Chase Stadium.
64. 64.
Yep, that's great.
Hattie says, soybeans to EU. Dear panel, almost all our soybean crops are GMO modified. The EU does not allow GMO crops. How does that figure into the deal just made? I may be misinformed. Can you comment? Happy birthday, Alan. Love the show, Harriet. And Mariana says,
did you wanna,
I mean,
sorry.
It's very interesting. It's a very good point. GMO modified products are not allowed to be grown in Europe. But maybe they made a deal for bringing it and selling it. And that means it could be resold and repackaged as well. It's all possible. So it can't be grown in Europe.
It's great that we don't know, though, isn't it?
It is great not that we don't know, because we really don't know anything in particular, as Ira pointed out. We just know there's a delay in tariffs. And what they're mostly concerned about is non-tariff barriers. That's what they're going to negotiate over, namely environmental protections, GMO kind of protections in Europe that the U.S. doesn't like, human rights kind of questions related to hourly wages that are higher, that are, sort of protections over chemical additives to products that are imported. I mean, all kinds of non-tariff barriers. And that is the most essential thing that will be discussed in the coming weeks.
We'll see.
Mariana says, Soupy, good morning, panel. I, too, grew up in Manhattan in the 50s and 60s and not only watched Soupy, but...
This is much sexier than soybeans, I got to tell you. People are all over the Soupy sales thing.
I got to go to his TV studio through my connection with Cass Elliott before she became the
Wow, there's a good reference.
It was crazy fun watching White Fang and pies flying around... Thanks, Ira and Joe, for sharing fond memories. Enjoy the soupy summer days. Cheers, M. Emily. And Eve says, Trump-Putin press conference. Dear panel, I think you had a letter yesterday about the transcript of the Trump-Putin press conference in Helsinki.
Correct.
The transcript and video on the White House website admits the question about Putin's support of Trump in the election or part of it. I think they have Putin's answer. This from Rachel Maddow's show, Russian State News, omits it entirely, and that's Eve.
You know, the Atlantic originally published it on the, I think this last week they published an article on this, and there are several examples given of the differences in the transcripts between the transcript that was put out on the White House and the video feed that they stream now, and the Soviet feed the Russia feed. I apologize. Forget where I am.
But they knew what was said. They never should have gone out wrong. I mean,
the point is that there was
a correction offered, not a correction, but a clarification.
Yeah, they
on
said
CNN,
it was a technical glitch.
On CNN this morning, they blamed something other. They were sort of backtracking a little on the story. I didn't quite
transcription
understand.
Software or something.
There was a technical glitch, but that means nobody read it before they actually handed it out, because everybody remembers the exchange. It was widely distributed.
Right. But I just want to point out the one thing that the Russians benefit greatly from any internal disagreements we have in the United States. So they provide feed or information to benefit themselves. If they have something on Trump or not, they really benefit from the fact that disputes emerge within the United States, that there's a lack of trust in the legitimacy of the democratic system in this country. They benefit every time from the fact when there is a major dispute between the European Union and the United States. So what they're doing is a disinformation campaign, or they manipulate information to benefit their own interests. And that is something to remember. That is just a trick they use, and they have been using for decades.
Nancy says, Faso polling. As a voter in Faso's district, I was called by a pollster. It started out asking normal demographic questions. Then it asked questions that started with long facts which were misleading and leaning right, way right. It was a ridiculous political diatribe. How could one respond to that? Does anyone pay attention to these fake polls? And that's from Nancy. Well, the purpose of those polls, folks, is not, by the way, to get information from you. The purpose of those polls is to convince you. And these are phony polls when they say, by the way, you know, so-and-so beat his wife. The reason is that they're trying to change your vote by telling you so-called facts that you didn't know. It doesn't have anything to do with the results of the so-called poll. It has to do with, it's a phony way of getting people oriented in an election.
Do you know whether or not the mainstream pollsters now are dialing cell phones?
They are.
Okay, because they, by dialing only landlines, you were excluding a large demographic.
No. They are, Ira, and they talk about it, you know, a lot. And they have algorithms and things that allow them to pick so many cell phone numbers. And then once they've established, not that I'm a pollster, by the way, but once they've established connections with some telephone numbers, then they know where they can go in the future. So there is that. Michael says, altering the record, dear panel, Tuesday night Rachel Maddow showed that the White House had altered the official video record and the official written transcript of the recent news conference with Trump and Putin. They edited out part of the reporter's questions to Putin, changed the import of Putin's answers. This is just one more outrageous action by the Trump administration. What has our country come to? Please comment. We did.
Well, you know, I agree with Ira, though. It's we all saw it. I mean, that's the thing. It's that you can you can do the transcript, and I guess it obviously matters. But still, we all saw it. We saw it happen live. You can't undo that damage.
But who are they trying to fool?
I don't know. That's a very good question.
Maybe the president himself.
I
am now convinced President Trump attended a workshop with that was led by President Putin on how to mess with video footage.
Well, let's presume for the sake of discussion that there was no ulterior motive and they just put out the wrong document. That just speaks to an inefficiency and incompetence.
Incompetence is what I would call it, right?
Crystal says, Trump shenanigans. Hello, everyone. To boil it all down, as long as people get their bread and circus, nothing will get done. We are getting plenty of circus, and some are getting a few crumbs, tax break, less restrictions like environmental, etc. And Timothy says, Putin invite walk back. Morning panel, I believe that Putin was first to walk back the timeline for the White House meeting. He announced his suggestion that they meet at the G20 at least the day before the White House announcement. Right. Again, the malignant narcissist needs to be first and foremost.
Yep.
And Paul says, weakening the term impeachment. Don't miss the other common pattern in this administration, that is, weakening any charge that is likely to be made against them. Therefore, floating a few ridiculous impeachments is a great idea before the real one comes along. By the time it arrives, everyone will be tired of impeachment. And by the way, Trump was joking himself about what happens during his impeachment trial the other day. So I think I think the letter writer makes a point.
We welcome your letters, panel, at WAMC.org. Let us go to some of the stories that we have left on the docket for this morning, which would bring us to the story of the, we get to say emoluments, which I just love saying.
It's a great word.
It's a great word, and I'm interested in this. So in a ruling against Trump, a judge has defined anti-corruption clauses in the Constitution for first time. A lawsuit accusing President Trump of violating the Constitution by maintaining a financial interest in his company's Washington hotel cleared a critical hurdle on Wednesday when a federal judge allowed the case to move forward. In the first judicial opinion to define how the meaning of the Constitution's anti-corruption clauses should apply to a president, Judge Peter, is it Mesitte? It's M-E-S-S-I-T-T-E. I apologize for my, if I have mispronounced it, I apologize for that. Of the U.S. District Court in Greenbelt, Maryland, said the framers' language should be broadly construed as an effort to protect against influence peddling by state and foreign governments. He ruled that the lawsuit should proceed to the evidence-gathering stage, which would clear the way for an examination, wait for it, of financial records that the president has consistently refused to disclose. The Justice Department is expected to forestall that by seeking an emergency stay and appealing the ruling.
As soon as I read the story, I started to think about what the rationale on the 5-4 decision on the Supreme Court of the United States would be for saying this does not fall within the emolument clause. It'll take a long time to get there. I think it's important that it's being said. Nevertheless, what one judge says at this stage of the game isn't going to make the final decision.
Well, the first thing I thought of when I read that story was Sarah Sanders getting up at the briefing the other day and saying that they were going to take security clearances away from these former CIA people because they were attempting to monetize their positions.
Yes.
And is there anybody who has done more monetizing of the position than Trump?
Right.
Right. And this is a lawsuit brought by the city of Washington and the state or the District of Columbia. And they have standing because they say that the Trump Hotel is taking business away from their own convention center and their own hotels. And it has a real impact on.
It's important that the Supreme Court rules and hopefully rules in the obvious way to most of us, because even if it's too late to do anything about Trump, we just don't want future presidents doing the kind of things that Trump has been doing.
And what makes you think that the Republican hacks on that Supreme Court are going to do anything but protect?
I can't be
the
confident,
president.
But if the law is clear, you have to hope for their better angels.
Just bringing up Kavanaugh now.
That's right.
That and fits in that picture
sure
very
vote.
Nice, though. There you go.
Okay, and then finally, in our 3 or 4 minutes left, I was mentioning to our panel before we started the show that we used to get to stories like this all the time, and given the last 2 years, we don't get to these stories much anymore. But there's the Mars story, which I find interesting. A large body of water on Mars is detected, raising the potential for alien life. The discovery suggests that the liquid conditions beneath the icy southern polar cap may have provided one of the critical building blocks for life on the red planet. How cool is that?
If I'm not mistaken, the Mars Company makes Snickers.
You know what I was going to say?
Oh, we're not talking about that.
I'm not going there.
Oh, my gosh. Are we anti-science here or what?
I think it's fascinating.
Yes.
Well, there's always the question as to what would happen. Let's say we find, some creatures there. Or we find that there was, the main reason is that we find that there was once life on Mars and that they did themselves in the way that this world is doing itself in right now.
And they vote in Chicago.
And it also speaks to the origin of life or where life comes from. And it's something we all, wrestle with as we, especially as we get older. It's like, where else is life? Although I really have been disillusioned ever since I realized my favorite Martian wasn't really real, and you can't move things with your finger.
That's a bummer. Italian scientists working on the European Space Agency's Mars Express mission announced on Wednesday that a 12-mile-wide, think about that, 12-mile-wide underground liquid pool is not just the momentary damp spot seen in the past, but it has been detected by radar measurements near the Martian South Pole as that of an actual water is there, they say. It is liquid, it's salty, and it's in contact with rocks.
I mean, think of that technology. Isn't that incredible?
It is.
You know,
it really
that's
is.
The fascinating part in terms of where how we make this progress, how we have international teams of scientists collaborating, figuring out those pieces, and really telling us, trying to educate us about what other opportunities lie ahead. So I think this is a fascinating moment. It's really positive, and I think I'm really glad we're talking about something like this.
It is.
That is challenging the mind, trying to figure out how to use that technology.
Well, it's a nice
so
reminder that science can sometimes matter still.
Yes.
The body of water appears similar to underground lakes found on Earth in Greenland and Antarctica. Mm-hmm. On Earth, microbial life persists down in the dark, frigid waters of one such lake. The ice on Mars would also shield the Martian lake from the damaging radiation that bombards the planet's surface. Mm-hmm. So that, again, makes sense. But.
Well, it doesn't seem so far-fetched that if as 100 years or less from now, we could be there and see it ourselves. But it would take a government a commitment, such as when John Kennedy, you know, said we're going to get a man on the moon. I don't see that kind of desire right now in Washington.
Remembering, of course, that there are human needs right here in this world right now that compete for resources.
Well, that was always the argument against space exploration. Why are we spending so much money there when we could spend it at home?
As well as be careful of what you find.
Yeah. But, you know, these are far-thinking people need to make these kinds of decisions. Yeah.
We are out of time. My thanks to all for engaging in our conversation, and we will continue with the program after this.